Welcome to Hot Plate, the conversations we should be having about our food and drink. I'm your host, Mirella Amato. Today on Hot Plate, we chat with Steve Riley from betterbeer.com about when good beer goes bad. Then, the enthusiasm for edibles and bathing in beer, and a weird widget that stumps us both. Josh, now we have a guest in the studio today.
Very exciting. Welcome.
The fantastic Mr. Steve Riley, who is a very good friend of mine and draft beer expert.
Expert.
Super expert.
Welcome, Steve.
Yeah.
You guys are setting the bar really high.
How long have you been working in draft, Steve?
Since 2001. Yeah, we work with bars and restaurants, hospitality professionals. We help them improve their draft beer quality, profitability, and their sales.
So forgive the ignorance of this question. Why do we need to care about this?
You drink beer.
I know
you
do.
Because I've been listening to the podcast.
Yes.
Yes. So when you go into a bar or restaurant, you get a pint of draft and it's cloudy. It's flat.
Okay.
It doesn't taste right. It's warm.
Yep.
Right? And you take a sip of it and you might not know what's wrong with it, but you know there's something wrong. And you go, man, that just doesn't taste right. It doesn't look right. Something's not right about it. We help bars solve that problem. So we'll work with them to say, you know, your lines aren't getting cleaned properly, or the temperature's not right, it's not being poured properly, it's in dirty glasses. All the things that go wrong with draft happen at the bar.
Okay.
And the old days when people were charging $4 for a pint, it didn't really matter. Like, honestly, you could buy trays of draft for, you know, those little glasses, 25 cents each. Now we have clients charging $10.50 for a pint of draft before tax.
Wow.
And that's not uncommon in Toronto. Like, it is in any major city across the country.
The other thing historically is there were fewer lines and the beer was moving quickly, so the issues occurred less frequently.
Oh,
right?
I see.
Historically.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, you go in a place, they have four taps. Mm-hmm. And again, trays of draft, right?
They're right.
Pumping out draft. Just one, like, they turn the tap on just one after the other, after the other, after the other. It didn't matter because it was, the keg would get tapped, it would get drained, and that was it.
Okay.
Now we see 20, 30, 50, 60, 80, 100 lines.
Okay.
And it's not being sold in a month.
Right. And all this more sort of small batch bespoke beer.
Exactly.
That you have to know is there and come in and order it, and it's not moving quite as quickly.
Exactly.
So then what happens to those pipes? What happens? What can happen?
So inside the line, you'll get a lot of buildup. So beer has a lot of calcium in it.
Calcium rich, should we say?
Yeah.
Yes.
I like that. Can we say that?
Mineral rich.
Thank you.
Okay. So inside the lines, you get what are called beer stone, and they look like little grains of sand.
Okay.
So like if you were to take a flashlight and shine it in the line that hadn't been cleaned in a while, you'll see it's little grains of sand, little white specks. And that's beer stone. It's just calcium deposits.
Oh,
and then
okay.
The yeast attaches to the calcium deposit, and then it produces diacetyl, and it gets a little sour, and all these notes and characteristics in the beer that turn the beer.
Okay.
And I always argue that it gives you an exaggerated hangover. So you'll go to a bar and you'll have two pints, and the next day you wake up and you feel like you had 10. Right? Your head's pounding, your stomach's turning, and you're like, oh, my, what happened last night, right? I only had two beers. Dirty lines.
So we're already deep into it.
Yeah, man.
But the reason...
I love that. Okay.
The reason I brought Steve in today...
Thanks. I really dove in.
I
know,
all
right.
Love it.
Thanks.
I love that you're such a curious cat. That makes two of us. It's a perfect segue, because I don't know about you, Joshna, but I still come across people quite often who do not drink draft. They say draft makes them sick.
I hear it a lot. Yeah.
Are you a draft?
I drink draft. I prefer the pint glass over the bottle.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that bigger sip. But my brother, in fact, is one of those. I don't touch draft.
Right. So
he has
very
serious opinions.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you can play this podcast
for him.
Because Steve has the answers.
Okay.
So I thought it would be very interesting to delve into, you know, the potential reasons why draft might impact people differently. And, you know, at the end of the day, draft beer and what's in the can and bottles is the exact same product, right?
It's exactly the same. If you go to the brewery, any brewery, they'll say, okay, we've got 1,000 liters of beer. We're going to put 200 into kegs, we're going to put 500 into cans, and we're going to put 300 into bottles. And it's the same liquid. It just tastes different. because of the freshness, the way it's treated, the quality control, like all those things that happen at the bar and restaurant. So
okay, this is super interesting because I have a notable experience of a different flavor, right? Between the thing that I crack open in a can and what comes out of a draft in a pint glass. Mm-hmm. I generally always prefer the pint glass.
Because it's poured into a glass, mm-hmm. so it's that you release the CO2, so it's properly carbonated.
Oh.
And more often than not, it's fresher. Huh. Because when you buy bottles, cans, especially at a bar and restaurant,
yeah.
they don't turn over them as fast as they do the kegs. So the kegs, they get them in, they sell on tap, they sell it, they empty the keg, they get the next one in, whereas the bottles kind of sit in the fridge.
Got
and
it.
Not saying the bottles and cans aren't fresh, but draft is usually fresher,
mm-hmm.
and it's like bread or milk. The fresher it is, the better it's going to taste.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, okay.
Draft is also better protected, right? Because the more liquid you have in the container, the less there's a possibility of like huge temperature sways and a little bit of oxygen getting in to, for example,
okay,
a bottle can cause
okay.
a lot of damage, whereas with draft, it's less of an issue.
Huh.
Light struck's the big one, skunky. Everybody uses the term skunky to describe it.
So tell me this. What is it that people, like, are people just dubious of a various bars' diligence around keeping these things clean and they're convinced that draft is a sort of bacteria factory?
I don't think that they're, well, they might be. And they're getting smarter with
okay.
this, right? With per bar where they say, don't drink the draft there. Or, I drink it here. But traditionally, your brother have always said, I always drink brand A at home, and then I go to a pub or a bar and I drink brand A and it doesn't taste the same.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So therefore, draft is bad. So I'm not drinking draft.
Oh.
And then they only drink bottles or cans.
Oh.
The problem is that the specific bar they were at didn't serve that brand properly, and that's the problem,
I
right?
See. Okay.
And the brewers lose their mind over this stuff because they spend a fortune making sure that the beer's proper in the keg, and they go through all these quality control issues,
sure.
right, and check to make sure everything's great. They give it to the licensee, to the bar owner. They store it in the kitchen, the dirty lines, all these things that they can do
yeah.
wrong. And then the guest gets a bad pint, your brother gets a bad pint, and that's it.
And the worst part is, as a consumer, or you know, as a customer, if I go into a bar and I order a beer, and it has gone through dirty lines, and it's a specific flavor.
Okay.
Anyway, as a consumer, I go into the bar and I notice that and I say something and inevitably they will say, well, let the brewery know there's a problem with the beer.
Oh.
They will not admit.
Right. And they take it, they pour the same beer and it's nothing changes. Yeah.
But in a perfect world, draft is better if it's treated properly.
Absolutely. And you cannot beat a great pint of draft beer that's properly poured, clean glass, clean lines and taps.
I think you're right.
It's like it is. And for the most part, people can't tell you why it's great or why it's bad, but they just know. Right? I go, man, that's a great pint of beer.
It's
I'm going to have another one.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I have forced myself to learn to drink beer because of exactly how appetizing that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the biggest way I describe it, as Morella was saying, you know, that smell when you walk in, is a Werther's candy. You know those Werther's?
Yeah, the hard caramels.
My dad loved
those, totally.
Right? That mouthfeel, the creamy texture, that mouthfeel that you get from a Werther's candy, that's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Dirty lines.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty
and
lines.
It creeps into different intensities.
Right.
You have another theory, though, that I love, Steve, about why some people get sick on draft, the unit theory.
Yeah, and this is what we call the million-dollar beer marketing theory.
Okay.
Right? So people drink beer in units, not in ounces. People drink beer in units, not in ounces. So what does that mean? If I go into a bar and we're gonna have three beers, right? We're gonna watch the game, we're gonna have three beers. You're drinking three times 20 ounces, essentially, right? You're drinking 60 ounces instead of three bottles, which is 36 ounces, right? So sometimes people say, I get all, you know, don't feel great the next day when I drink so much draft. Well, yeah, because you're drinking so much draft because the pint glasses are so much bigger
okay.
than the bottles. Nobody ever says, let's drink 12 ounces of beer at lunch
yeah.
today. Nobody's ever said that.
No.
They say, are we going to have a beer?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, well, what are we having? Okay, well, yeah, sure. Okay, I'll take a pint of.
Yep.
Yeah,
and the standardized unit is a bottle. Mm-hmm. Like, yes. Just in terms of thinking about liquor licensee kind of stuff. It's about the bottle.
Yeah.
Which is how many ounces?
12.
Okay. And a pint is?
Typically, it's 18 ounces in a 20-ounce glass.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
12 ounces in a bottle. So you're 50% more liquid volume.
Right. Oh, I've learned a lot.
And that's why I call it the $1 million beer marketing secret, because the brewers love it.
Yeah.
Because they're selling 50% more
totally.
Beer. Right?
So just for fun, although this is probably a bad idea, what is the grossest thing you've ever seen behind the
good
bar?
Good question.
Steve has crazy pictures.
I would love to know.
So we don't clean lines and we don't service lines, but on our website, betterbeer.com, if you go, there's a wall of shame. And
good for you.
There are, because we've done, I think we're at probably close to 15 or 16,000 audits now. So across Canada and the States, 10 years we've been doing this.
Okay.
And we've seen some nasty stuff. And we've taken the worst and put them on the wall of shame. But yeah, there's...
Give us a highlight.
The biggest thing, couplers, right? So couplers are the piece of equipment that attaches to the keg. That's how you tap
Got
the
it.
Keg.
Okay.
So, yeah, right? So growth on those, they're leaking. Faucets where the beer comes out, the tap. Where it's all growth there. And then fobs are the big ones. So fobs, they're like a plastic cylinder that kind of mount on the wall. And they eliminate foaming at keg change. So when the keg empties...
Oh, I've heard about this. Okay.
The ball drops and it... So you're a bartender, you're pouring a pint, stops, right? So it keeps the beer in the line, stops foaming, keg change. Inside that fob, that's the telltale sign, right? You get your flashlight, you shine it in there, and it's just like funky... Blue cheesy looking, just
blue nasty. Cheesy funky. Oh,
yeah, it's gross.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness, I feel like we've just done the opposite of my intended effect with this segment, was to encourage people
to get out there and drink a draft.
Yeah, I love draft, but and this is a rare occurrence,
but
right?
For the most part, most people do a pretty good job.
Thank you. This is where I was going to ask. Generally speaking, as people who do see the underbelly of this, the state of affairs out there generally is not one that would warrant this the level of hysteria around the anti-draft.
So we do an audit, we score them, and so we've quantified quality, which has taken us years to figure out.
Okay.
We've finally done it. Average first score is a 61, which is pretty good.
Okay.
Right? Most of our clients who've been on the program for years are somewhere around 90, 95.
Great. Okay.
So if you go in and I go into a bar and we score them a 61, you get a pint of draft, you pretty good chance it's probably going to be okay, but it could be better. So our job is to work with them to get it better. Rarely do we see 20, 30, 40, 50%. Like, that's really bad when we get down to that point.
Okay.
And for the most part, I'll know when I walk in because everybody at the bar is drinking bottles or cans. That is the telltale sign. When I know if I'm on a sales call, if I'm going to succeed, if I walk in and all the regulars are drinking bottles and cans, I know there's a problem with the draft.
Oh.
Right? Especially if they've got 10, 20, 30 lines, pints on sale, right? We've got this feature beer on sale for $5 a pint, and everybody's drinking bottles and cans. Usually that's a sign there's something wrong with the draft.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's when we're getting to blue cheese and the fob levels, it's abundantly clear.
Yeah.
In the pint.
Yeah. You can
What are the signs?
Well,
people are looking
so
for
diastole, the butter.
Yeah. Right?
A lot of the butter. Cloudy. You know, if I was at a bar on Monday, and we're doing an audit and I'm checking the fobs, right, like we do. And I'm like, okay, well, that one's really cloudy. It looks like Shock Top,
right?
Or Belgian Moon, like a Belgian wheat beer, unfiltered, cloudy, can't see through it. You know, you can see the ball floating in there, but not really. And I'm like, we just saw Belgian Moon down there and they only have Belgian Moon on one tap. Oh, well, look at this brand. It's a filtered lager. Why does it look like an unfiltered lager? So, and that line had
alarm bells go off.
Right?
Yeah.
So if it's to answer your question, if it's cloudy, doesn't taste right, there's sediment in it and there shouldn't be.
Yeah. So not all New England IPAs are dirty. They're just meant to be cloudy. Another thing I wanted to touch on, Steve, is carbonation, which I think is another reason why draft can be perceived as tasting different from bottles or cans. And Josh and I were talking about texture.
Totally.
A few episodes back. And although someone might not necessarily register when they're drinking draft that the carbonation level is off, the beer will taste different to them, right?
It's like drinking flat Perrier. Historically, they always use air compressors to push draft. So there was no CO2 going into the beer because you need carbon dioxide to push the beer through the line, right? So no CO2, they used air. Beer goes flat, and air is an enemy to beer. So they'd use air. And then Guinness came on the market in the mid-80s. Hey, we got this Guinness gas. Yeah. You need this special gas of CO2 and nitrogen to push Guinness through. So then they started using Guinness gas for everything. But if you take a sip of Guinness, it doesn't have a lot of carbonation.
No.
On purpose.
On purpose, right? That's the style. That's the way it's brewed. But if you take a pint of any lager, ale, insert any beer here besides Guinness, it has much more carbonation. So what bars and restaurants have historically done is use that Guinness gas to push through all their beer, which is totally wrong. And then you get taste like the bottom of the keg because there's less CO2 at the bottom than there is at the top when the keg starts to empty.
Yeah.
Because they're using the wrong gas to go in. So carbonation totally affects the taste of the beer, the head on the beer, which turns into profitability. Right, because you can't get the head on the beer because there's no CO2 in there to release it. So profitability, the taste of the beer, beers get returned from guests that say, it just doesn't, it's flat, it's the bottom of the keg.
Sure.
I don't like it, doesn't taste right.
Whereas that's something that will always be consistent in a bottle or a can.
Yes.
Unless the brewery does something extremely
terribly wrong.
But there's more margin. So if I'm a bar owner, I want to sell draft instead of bottles and cans because I make more money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the 50%, right? We're selling more. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that it's right. So and that gas piece is one that's really confused. And we help clients with that all the time, saying, we use math and science. Here's the math and science behind it. This is why you got to have the right carbonation.
Well, Steve, I want to take a moment to thank you personally for increasing the number of establishments where I can drink.
If you go to betterbeer.com and you click on Discover Better Beer, we've got all of our places that we audit every month, and they're all on there.
Oh, that's so helpful. Okay.
It's kind of like the health board, right?
Yeah.
Where it's, you can see we're coast to coast. We've got clients all across Canada. But yeah, those places serve a great pint. And we're working there. We're trying to get there.
Thank you. I've learned a ton. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me in.
I must admit, Josh, now when you sent me that little note about edibles being less, what was it?
Not that people less interested, right? Again, another study found that Canadians are now less interested in edible cannabis after legalization than they were when polled before legalization.
I'm not surprised. Are you surprised?
I am a little bit surprised.
Interesting.
Because the edible piece is one of those things that really has been allowed to flourish with the advent of legalization, right? And I've heard a lot of people who are sort of like, I can't smoke it. But it is a fun ride to have a gummy bear or a cookie or something like that. And I've heard a lot of people really excited about the increase in options for edible cannabis because legalization was as close as it was. And obviously now here.
That's true. I think, the issue with edibles is, how much is the right amount? I think with smoking, although it is, I guess smoking is not ideal. You can vape.
Mm-hmm.
At least you're very aware of how much you're taking
in,
and there's a little bit more control there. And with edibles, there's the delay.
The delay.
And then it hits you and that's it.
And what happens? That body buzz is a whole other thing.
How do you know your dose?
Yeah. And that's precisely it. And what is so interesting is you see in the piece that I sent over, part of the two most influential reasons for this decrease in excitement has been about one crazy bad experience that nobody wants to duplicate because they ate too much or whatever it was. And they're like, we can't turn it off. This sucks. We're not doing this again. And the second piece was either a pet or a little one getting into a stash thinking it was chocolate or a treat or something and then eating it and getting crazy stoned.
That's a real thing. And I have read articles about other areas where it's legal and how progressively the laws have changed so that the snacks are looking uglier
And less and less appetizing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess particularly for to prevent children from getting at it.
From getting excited about it. Right.
But this is, children will put anything in their mouth.
That, I mean, that's the other truth. The Tide Pods will tell us that.
Is that a real concern that children, I mean, lock it away?
This is what I thought. Put it in a container and in a high enough away that the kid can't get at it.
For me, the concern is more the dosage. And I came across an article a few weeks back that I think the headline was that cannabis-infused beverages are poised to be the next, like, huge thing. And again, I hesitate. And in my mind, I was thinking specifically about the beer replacements.
Yes.
And I understand that you're pushing the fact that it's healthier, and that's great. But I feel, you know, first of all, the flavor issue, I don't know what that's going to taste like. Mm. By all accounts, not great. And from there, again, you know, you have one, and then, you know, you feel like another, but can you have it? You have to wait. These are all questions that I have that make me very nervous. And mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me now that it is legal and people maybe are having a little bit more experience.
They're trying it out.
And maybe starting to do a little more research now that they are trying it out, mm-hmm. and seeing the very real issues there.
Yep. It does. I mean, it's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's too wild and crazy. But I thought it was really interesting to read that the overhype of the legalization, we're gonna eat, and then when it actually is here, we're all like, oh no.
But just to the edibles.
Oh, no. Just to the edibles.
To me, that makes sense because once you're aware of the different ways, then mm-hmm. you're aware of the ways the different smoking versus ingesting will impact you and the consequences. The other thing I thought was really interesting mm-hmm. in that article, because they did another poll and they found that few people were aware of CBD and its beneficial properties and that could be a thing.
As therapeutic as it is, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. And with medicinal marijuana being a thing in Canada for a long time, I would have thought there would have been more awareness about that and more enthusiasm. And certainly the beverage companies are banking mm-hmm. on that.
I was surprised too.
Yeah. Side note, I don't know if you noticed this, but I think the person who conducted the study, Mr. Sylvain Charlebois, isn't he the dude from episode 6?
He is.
When we did food insecurity?
Our old friend Sylvain, indeed.
Right? I feel like he's our kind of dude. We've already covered two of his studies.
It's the truth.
We should keep an eye out for him.
Yeah, we should keep an eye out for him. Nice one.
Josh, now, have you heard of beer spas?
No. No, but I'm intrigued.
They are a thing.
Really?
Yes. Beer spas started, I'm pretty sure, in the Czech Republic, but now you can find them in Austria, Japan, Iceland, Hungary, and there's even a few in the U.S. And these are places where you can bathe in beer.
Okay. Tell me why I would want to.
Well, I can't see why anyone would not want to, personally.
All right, beer lady, tell me more.
Beer, I think we can all agree, is a very relaxing.
Okay, sure.
And so the notion, I think, of bathing in pools of beer, and I've been doing a lot of snooping around. I think the occasional place you're literally bathing in a huge vat of beer.
Right.
But more commonly, you'll be bathing in some water that has hops or yeast.
Oh, I see.
Or various beer-inspired
ingredients. Bath. Right.
And just imagine the smell.
Sure.
And then you're lying there and you can enjoy, of course, unlimited beer. Some places have pretzels. There's various treatments, you know, hop scrubs, beer foot baths. So this is a thing, an international mm-hmm. thing. I've mm-hmm. always been intrigued, but the reason it's hit my radar recently is that someone dug up a study, and beer is incredibly good for your skin.
Well, that I was going to ask, because I actually have used a stout in my hair.
Yes.
Right? And mm-hmm. I have a little bit of vanity about my hair, so I baby it with things. When I heard that luxurious thing was a thing, I went for it, and it was noticeably softer, right? Well-conditioned hair, for sure.
So beer rinse for your hair. And sometimes people will combine apple cider vinegar with the beer.
Okay.
To my understanding, that has to do with the pH and the B vitamins in the beer that really give you
awesome.
That shine. But this study, there were unlimited number of compounds. I won't even read them because they're all scientific. But what they said, that potential uses for these substances in dermatology may include treatment of eczema, contact dermatitis, pigmentary disorders, skin infections, skin aging, skin cancers, and photoprotections.
That's a lot.
It is.
That's almost everything that is to do with your skin.
Well, beer Why is packed with vitamins and minerals, okay, so it makes sense to me, all these different compounds.
But then with that thinking, there should be like beer body butter.
There should.
Right? Or something like that.
I've seen beer shampoos.
Yeah.
I've seen beer lip balms, but not beer.
Right, because if it does all that skin conditioning, that should be able to stay on. Right? Okay. We're now really dialing this up.
Yeah.
I like this a lot.
I've always been intrigued.
There's a hot plate product line is coming with the beer body butter.
It smells so, certainly the lip balms, they smell so good.
Whoa,
so just imagine a full body lotion.
But if it's doing all that magical skin stuff, mm-hmm. I want a tube of it. I want some hand lotion. I want some something. Oh, this is interesting.
But again, we're getting into, or you could just drink it.
It's true,
right? Fascinating to me, all these different uses
right.
for beer. And it's interesting, speaking of just drinking it, they are still looking into whether any of these, because these are vitamins and minerals that are in the beer that have all these benefits if you bathe in it. They're not sure if drinking it has any of those effects. So,
right.
You know,
okay,
it
I
works
was gonna
topically.
Ask if it is, if you can ingest it and have the same impact as a topical application.
We don't know.
Okay.
That's yet another. These scientific studies crack me up. It's like, who is studying the effects of beer on skin?
And how are they, like, what are the variables that are being controlled? How is it being applied? Still, though, I'm interested.
I mean, I was always sold on the idea, and it's on my to-do list should I ever end up in one of those areas, but now I'm super convinced.
Right.
I don't know if I'm convinced. I'm trying to think of how many bottles it would take to fill my bathtub
right.
at home.
What the average volume of a tub is. Fair enough.
Because then you also have to warm it.
Right.
You'd have to go
old school. Because you're not going to dive into a cold beer tub.
Yeah, or get one of those, you know, in the movies, they have that little metal tub that you kind of just sit in and then they pour
it. Yeah, that's you know? Right. Oh my God, that's funny.
I think I have to wait till I actually get to a spa that does
right.
it. I don't think I could commit to doing it at home.
That is really interesting. I also, part of me wonders if you would be sticky.
So Josh, now it's time for Weird Widget.
Ooh, very exciting.
And Steve Riley has brought in the
Ooh,
widget for
Steve,
us today.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
What did you bring? Let us see.
All right,
see
you ready?
Uh-huh.
Here we go.
Oh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay, so Steve has put down this. This is plastic.
Mm-hmm.
It honestly looks like a teeny tiny little garbage can.
It does.
Right?
Yeah.
And it has like two raised sides that you might look. It reminds me of like one of those big plastic bins that you can buy just to store a bunch of stuff in. But it really is the size of, it's very small. It sits very happily in the palm of my hand.
Yeah. And I can see that the edges have what looks to me like grips. I feel like maybe this is meant to
hold, to twist and turn.
Or turn.
Yep. And then these, they're these little on the sides that I think are handles. There's some, I can see what looks like a little lock-in piece, right?
Well, let's be honest. You could put a little string through these two holes and give it to a child and tell them it's a basket for their doll and they would believe you.
Easily.
It's perfect.
I love it.
Easily.
Yeah.
Or something that goes down in a well.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
A little bucket is the word.
You have a secondary market for these, Steve.
Yeah,
I do now. I'm taking notes.
Right?
I want to have a closer look at the inside. I want to see. So it doesn't screw onto anything. It just looks like it clips on.
Or just one turn and locks in somewhere, right?
So is this to stop people from touching something?
It should. So if it's not, but
it's not.
But to adjust, to stop them from adjusting the gas regulator, where
that's what I was thinking.
That's a huge problem in the industry. That's that's a whole different podcast.
Okay,
because people love to tinker with the gas pressure. It's not for that, but you're close.
Okay, so this is to pause something or keep something. Yeah, one with it froze it like sort of.
It's a lid of some sort.
It's a lid on something. Yeah.
It's a lid on something.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to know. Do you have any other guesses?
No, I don't.
Yeah. The biggest problem with line cleaning.
Yeah.
When we talk to people about line cleaning, they say, "Steve, I don't want to clean my lines as often as I should because I lose all the beer that's in the line." Right?
Right.
So the line cleaner comes in, they hook up the thing, and they waste all the beer, and there's no way to capture that beer that's in the line. It just gets dumped down the drain. And if you have 20 lines and it's 100 feet long, it's 50 ounces per line times 20 lines,
that's
right?
A lot
it starts
of beer.
To add up, right? Really quickly. So what this is, it's a coupler cap. So the coupler attaches to the top of the keg. So which if you know your line cleaner is coming in on Wednesday morning, right? Tuesday night, your night manager comes in, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, it's starting to slow down business. You take the coupler off. We'll use Stella or Heineken because it's the most expensive, right? Or Guinness. You take it off, and you put the coupler on this cap, and you engage the coupler. So now it thinks that the keg, pretend this is a keg.
Oh!
Right? And it's empty. And then you trip the fob, so the fob, and you go to your cash machine, your point of sale machine, right? And you put in where you have 2 pints or however many you have. Your job service guy will tell you. So 2 pints of Heineken. As soon as you sell, the bartender sells a pint of Heineken, pulls the tap on, the beer goes through the line. Second pint goes through the line. Now the line's empty. So you shut the tap off. Now the line is empty full of beer. You've sold those 2 pints. The line cleaner comes in the morning, takes the cap off, and cleans the lines. And now you've sold all the beer in the line instead of wasting it.
Okay.
So at $8 per line times 20 lines, now you've sold all that beer instead of dumping it down the drain.
That's super clever, but also you have to be good with timing. Because if you run out early...
Yeah, to anticipate how many beers you need.
Now, the brewery sales reps are not going to like this. So I apologize to anybody who's listening. But if I come in and I want brand A and it's out, right? And you say, I'm sorry, we're 86, this brand, right? It's gone. Probably going to order a different beer.
Right.
Right? Nobody's going to say, oh, this is crazy. I can't believe you're out of that beer. I'm leaving. They're going to say, oh, okay, no problem. I'll have one of those.
And but what if you're down to your last line and 8 people shuffle into the bar?
If business is that good, you can afford to lose all the beer, right?
Fair enough.
But yeah, you put this on, let's say you've got 10 lines, you put this on 5 or 6 of them and you blow it out and it saves you $8 every single month.
Look at that.
Okay, is this a betterbeer.com original?
No, you can buy them anywhere. We sell them, but you can buy them from your draft service guys. Should be able to get them for you. We sell them pretty much at cost for us. Like it's just, we're just trying to help people. And especially we give them to our clients. We're just like, here you go. And it's a game changer because there's no way you can't take the beer out of the line, put it into a different container and then put it back into the line. The health board goes crazy because you're taking...
Also, that's gross.
It's gross, and you don't know, you know, there's a lot of variables there. So what this does, it lets you sell the beer in the line instead of dumping it down the drain.
Boom!
Nice. And in a pinch, doll toy. Thanks for listening. If you're enjoying The Hot Plate, rate us or leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you to Joshna for joining us today. Hot Plate is recorded at Eggplant Picture and Sound Studios. Our audio engineer is Brad Tigwell. Original music by Dave Bell. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. That's a wrap.